Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Society is nothing to objectify wrong with that. This system and this country has torn apart my family and our family. You can't have a black family and be together. How many more funerals do we got to go to? And how many more scenes of the crime do we got to watch them chalk out black figures on the concrete before we realize that the only way for us to ever get out of this predicament is to struggle to survive? Nobody gonna give it to us. We just gonna have to take it.
Holler to him, man. Yeah. Here we go, turn it up, let's start. From block to block, we're standing hard to Jack and Mark. And the punk police can't fake the emergency. We can have big stuff, baby. But right now, I got my mind set up. Looking down the bottle of my car, get up. Cause it's time to make the payback back. To my brothers on the block, better stay black.
Once again, that call-in number is 646-200-0067. You guys can hit me up on Facebook, Dino Dean Show. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Dino Dean Show. You can also shoot me an email, and that email address is dinodeanshow@hotmail.com. In our last segment, we're going to have another Get It Off Your Chest Sunday. This is the segment where we talk about any and everything from politics, religion, current events, our community. No subject is off limits. But in our first segment, we have one author. And she has written a fantastic book called Farrakhan the Movie, and her name is Layla Wills. And with that said, welcome to the Dino Dean Show, Layla.
Hi, Dino. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And the first question that I wanted to ask you, Layla, tell us a little bit of something about yourself. Let us know about your background.
I guess the most relevant thing about me would be how much time I spent in the Nation of Islam. And that would be since I was like 17, I first started going to the final call to hear the minister. And at that time, you know, the Nation was very, very popular in hip-hop. So even before I went to the final call, I had already heard of the minister and Khalid and things like that just from the songs. And so I joined the Nation a couple of years later, and I worked at the final call for a short time. I worked for Minister Ishmael for a short time, for Mother Tyneta for a short time, and I left the Nation right after the Million Man March. And so I think when people first hear that I was an ex-member, they think this is some kind of expose on the Nation, and that's really not what kind of book it is.
Absolutely. And what was your inspiration for writing this book?
Well, I had the idea back in, like, 2001, and I started doing the research, but the focus of the book was on the Minister Farrakhan, as a phenomenon, because we were just a few years from the Million Man March, and I really didn't get into the Million Family March and all that kind of stuff, but the Million Man March, and he was a phenomenon in the black community, or in America, period. So I wanted to do a movie like, Why do so many people listen to him, and why do so many other people hate him? So the angle of the story from the very beginning was I wanted to show the influence of the Nation of Islam, whether or not people were actually in their ranks, but how it has affected Black America. So then in 2002 is when I first approached the minister about doing the film. And I was at that time I was in New York and worked for several media companies, but I was pursuing doing a film on him at that time. And so I approached him then, and he wasn't too keen on the idea, but after some discussion, then he agreed to that we would sit down after Savior's Day, and he would tell me his story. He could see I had already given him a draft, so he could kind of see where I was going. But then as time went on, and I came to Chicago, and then we didn't meet to do have sessions about his life story, and at that time, like, he was supposed to have an autobiography in the works, so I was kind of like, okay, well, if he does an autobiography, I can adapt a portion of that into the film. But then as years went on, we became further and further away from the Million Man March, so then my storyline wasn't going to work anymore. So then by the time they announced, like, I was in New York, like I said, and I would come back to Chicago, and you would just notice the nation changing, their language and different things were changing. And once they announced the marriage with the Church of Scientology, then it was like, okay, you know, like, you really didn't know where this was going to end up.
Oh, okay. So you know what, Layla? We're going to talk about the Scientology piece a little bit later in the show.
The answer is the phenomenon. I was doing it as the Nation of Islam as this huge phenomenon in America.
Very good. And why the title Farrakhan the Movie?
Because I didn't want it to seem as though this was the definitive Louis Farrakhan biography, you know, like, so I wanted it to know that, but this is film, this is a screenplay that could possibly end up on screen as is, or it could be adapted in another way, but I wanted it to play out like a movie inside the minds of the people who were reading it, because a picture is worth a thousand words. So just by me referring to an image, you would come to a conclusion rather than me spending 10 pages describing what was going on.
Very good. And also, I read the book, and I want to let everybody know it's a good read. It reads quickly, and it was very interesting. And one of the things you revealed in the book is about the schism between the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X that I found to be quite shocking. Could you let the listeners know what that schism was per your book?
Okay, yeah, because the situation between the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X was not as cut and dry as it kind of as we have grown up to believe. And you know, like, the chickens come home to roost statement wasn't the crux of what happened between the two of them. But pretty much Malcolm had found out that from, you know, according to Malcolm X, he found out from Wallace Muhammad, who was the son of Elijah Muhammad. Wallace says that he didn't tell Malcolm, you know, Malcolm discussed it with him. You know, it was like a he said, she said situation. But basically Malcolm found out that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had taken, had children with other women inside of the nation. And two of those women were people who Malcolm had brought into the ring, had some kind of romantic relationship with before he married Sister Betty. And to me, that's what was so, it wasn't that, you know, this is just me as an observer, but it didn't seem as though the whole wife thing or, you know, some people say they weren't his wives and all that, but it seems specifically because of these two that Malcolm felt very, very betrayed. But he found out about this a year before he made the chickens come home to roost statement. He had known about it for a year, and then when the president, John F. Kennedy, was shot, and Elijah Muhammad told all of the ministers not to speak on it, by then Malcolm had acquired this very defiant tone, and his lectures were not in accord to how the nation, how the messenger was delivering his lecture. So it was like a very complicated situation. And it was interesting because before Malcolm even made the statement, before the chickens come home to roost, he said, I know I'm going to get in trouble for this. So then they made that statement. Now, I just want to say one other thing about this, because this was in December of 1963. Then the next Sunday after he made the statement, Elijah Muhammad asked the minister, Minister Farrakhan, to go to mosque number 7 to speak instead of Malcolm, because now he had been silent. So then when the conversation between Malcolm and the minister happened, where the minister has said through the years that Malcolm told him about the women, and then in Malcolm's autobiography, he specifically says that Minister Lewis X out of Boston knew about the women for 7 months. So it's like, but I don't know how, why, like he specifically like named the minister, so I don't really know what's behind that.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I found that very interesting. I had not known that. And also, I'm glad you clarified that to me on air, that these were some romances that Minister Malcolm X had prior to him marrying Betty Shabazz, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me ask you this as well. Tell us about Brother Louis Farrakhan, the early years when he was a child, through your research.
When he was a child, you said?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So according to, and a lot of us who have been around the nation, you know, and heard all the lectures, you know, this is pretty much where I got everything from as far as his childhood and growing up in Boston and taking violin lessons. And his mother was from St. Kitts, a very, strict disciplinarian over him and his brother. He didn't know his dad, and his dad was from Jamaica. But he didn't know him personally, and, his mother raised him and his brother as a single mother, and she made huge sacrifices to pay for his violin lessons and his brother Alvin's piano lessons, which both of them carried their instruments through the rest of their lives. His brother passed away quite a few years ago.
Okay, so basically you're telling us that he came from the strong stock of a strong mother, and she
mm-hmm.
molded him greatly into the man he's become today.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And he would tell you, too, how much of an influence his mother was.
Absolutely. And all of our mothers have influence on us. And luckily, he had the mother that he had, or we would not be knowing him as the man he is today. So that's a very good thing for all of us. And talk to us about the role of the FBI behind the scenes, trying to have the Nation of Islam implode upon itself.
Okay, well, that went on from early, early on. The Nation of Islam, you could say, officially started in 1930 when Master Farhat Muhammad raised Elijah Muhammad. He started the Nation of Islam, and then before he left the scene in 1934, he made Elijah Muhammad his supreme minister. But all the way back, the FBI was keeping tabs on the Nation of Islam, which they called the Cult of Islam. And you know, when you get the FBI files, a lot of things are missing. And then when J. Edgar Hoover died, I think it was in 1972, we lost a lot of files went with him.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have everything, but the FBI was keeping tabs on them since early, early on. And, you know, at that time, there were communist concerns. There was a lot of stuff going on in the country and the world. And through the 50s, they weren't, you know, they were, like, keeping tabs. I didn't see, and I'm not saying they weren't trying to destroy the group early on, but I didn't see the real effort to destroy them until Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X started really getting big. So I would say that was probably in the 60s.
Okay.
And, they took an active role in deciding, as Elijah Muhammad aged, they took an active role in deciding which direction the group would go in once he wasn't around anymore.
Okay. And also, tell us about some of the parallels between Imam Warth Deen Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan.
Some of the parallels between those two?
And let me tell you what I mean by me reading the book. I noticed how the Imam changed certain things about the mosque and certain things about the nation. And today, the minister seems to be taking the nation in a bit of a different course. That's what I mean about the parallels between the two.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are quite a few Nation of Islam archivists and people who have the original, like Muhammad Speaks newspaper and things like that, where they are like all out, all up in arms about the direction of the Nation of Islam right now, and they say that the minister has taken the nation. Like, it may have taken him like 20 years or something, but basically he took the nation all the way back to where what Wallace did in from 1975 to, on. So, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that.
Okay, very good. And let me ask you this. After the death of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the nation sort of went into a tailspin. Tell us how Minister Farrakhan brought the nation back to life and made it strong again.
Well, he was, he stuck with Wallace for a couple of years, and then he left the Nation of Islam under Wallace, went to L.A. to try to go back into show business, and then he had a meeting with Bernard Kouchner, who is now Jibril Muhammad, and that's when Bernard Kouchner was encouraging him to restart the nation. So, a lot of things took place, and he decided to rebuild the Nation of Islam under the original teaching of Elijah Muhammad instead of the direction that Wallace had taken them into. So the new group of the Nation of Islam under the minister had their first Savior's Day in, I believe it was 1981. So during that time, I think the crowd was like 2,300 or 3,000, like somewhere right around there. And then he just continued to build from there, trying to get the old members back. And some of them came, some of them didn't, and that's how he built a strong following. He just kept going around and what he described as being an evangelical preacher for the nation, being on the road, to recruit people.
Okay, very good. Layla, we're coming up against a break right now. So on air with me today is Layla Will. She's author of the book Farrakhan the Movie, and we're going to take a brief break, and we will be right back.
Hello, I'm Debbie Thomas. As an Olympic skater, I learned how important it was to seek medical attention for any injuries I received on and off the ice. Now, as a doctor and a surgeon, I know that getting early treatment for many conditions such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and osteoporosis can greatly improve and even save lives. If your loved ones haven't had a checkup recently, urge them to make an appointment today or make one for them. You might just save a life. Help close the health gap.
A man surrounded by controversy. A man born in America, raised in America. Louis Farrakhan is part of the American story. The same country that gave birth to baseball and Elvis.
Thank you very much.
Gave birth to Louis Farrakhan. Go inside the Nation of Islam and the life of Louis Farrakhan. What really happened with Malcolm X? Why is he revered by some and hated by others? What is the future of the Nation of Islam? Farrakhan, the movie, now playing in print. Starring Louis Farrakhan, Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, Wallace Muhammad, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. With special appearances by Muhammad Ali, the Anti-Defamation League, Khalid Muhammad, Jesse Jackson. Farrakhan the Movie, a film too explosive for the big screen, is now playing in print. To experience Farrakhan the Movie on your Kindle, iPad, and other reading devices, go to Amazon.com. Available as ebook or paperback. Parental guidance suggested. FarrakhanMovie.com.
So you can't save money? That's easy as pie. Brown bagging lunch instead of going out. $6 save times 5 days a week times 10 years is $21,000. That's a lot of lettuce. Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow. FeedThePig.org.
You see cha-cha-cha to this Mardi Gras. I'm the dopest female that you've heard thus far. And I do get better, the voice gets wetter. Nobody gets hurt,
as long as you let her.
Do my thing with an 89 swing. The dopeness I write, I guarantee delight. To the hip-hop maniac, the uptown brainiac in full effect. MC Light is back, and better than before. As if
Welcome back to the Dino Dean Show. The call-in number is 646-200-0067. Once again, that call-in number is 646-200-0067. And on air with me today is author Layla Will. She's written an explosive new book called Farrakhan the Movie. And Layla, are you still with us?
Yep, I'm here.
Let me ask you this. Let's talk about this Scientology piece, because I know a couple of years during Savior's Day, I noticed that the ministers mentioned something about Scientology. Tell us what you know about Scientology and exactly why do you feel that the nation is starting to drift in that direction?
The Scientology subject is so loaded. All right. So first of all, a lot of our people in the black community don't really understand or know what Scientology is. So Scientology was started like in 1950, Dianetics was written in 1950 by L. Ron Hubbard. And then a few years later, I believe it was 53, is when he incorporated and started the Church of Scientology. And basically they have only recently have their true religious beliefs come out, because we're now in the era of WikiLeaks and things like that. But before then, what Scientology would do is that you, as you excelled or graduated from one level to the next, more of their theology, if you want to call it theology, would be revealed to you. But, you know, now everything's all out in the open. So basically, the God of Scientology is someone named Xenu, X-E-N-U, who was an overlord 75 million years ago, and he took a bunch of beings and brought them to Earth, and then, like, you know, something about they were killed or detonated inside of a volcano, and then these loose spirits, which they call Satan, attached themselves to humans, to human beings. So as you graduate, as you enter the ground level of Scientology and you keep excelling, what you're doing is releasing all of the problems in your life are caused by these spirits. So you're releasing them as you graduate and go further up the bridge to total freedom in Scientology. But Scientology members are not, this is not revealed to them until they get to certain levels. So the Nation of Islam, you know, I really can't zero in and pinpoint exactly when this relationship started, because you can go all the way back to 2006, and Tony Muhammad, who was the Western Regional Minister of the Nation of Islam, in a Scientology event, receiving an award on behalf of Minister Farrakhan. So I really don't know how long ago all of this has been going on. But basically in 2009, the minister announced a marriage between the Nation of Islam and the Church of Scientology in 2009. And we haven't, I mean, I knew about it, but no one had reported on it. It's like a total pilot. And the Church of Scientology is huge, is very, very controversial. I mean, they have like groups that are anti them. There's this group called Anonymous. And when people, if you want to investigate it yourself, you can go to a couple of these websites, whywewprotest.net, dinu.net. Like, it's quite a few places where all these, Scientology has been ridden with, like, court cases, allegations of abuse, people calling it a cult, and, you know, things like that. So I don't know what to say, but the nation has. What they have done is adopted certain structures of the Church of Scientology. They have a national auditing captain. They have the, you know, like an auditing department. They set up these org boards. And that's the thing, is that Scientology has a language all on its own. And if you don't know their lingo, you may not, you know, people may be speaking over your head. But in 2011, the minister said it himself, you know, that he found some value in the Church of Scientology in auditing. And the Nation of Islam has adopted that as part of, it seems like part of their program.
And what is this auditing? Could you explain that once again, please?
Well, auditing is a central practice of Scientology. Scientology doesn't have, I mean, I think they have like gatherings and all that, but they don't have a specific, you know how Christianity, you have tithing, you have communion, you have these specific practices that you do. Auditing is a central practice of Scientology. And basically it's you and the auditor, you being the pre-clear. Well, let me just back up for a second. So what happens is that, like, if you were just walking in New York in Times Square and the Scientology people are out there, they'll point you to, you know, like, we're showing a free movie down here, and then you go in there and it's a Scientology film, and then you take a personality test or what they call a stress test, and it's really long, and they find what trouble spots you have, and if you don't, and then they recommend Scientology services based on whatever your problem is. So then when you sign up for auditing, and every service in the Church of Scientology has an associated fee, which they call a requested donation. It's a specific amount of money that is, because the Church of Scientology is a tax-exempt, corporation or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, so you have to pay for your auditing and all of that, and you sit in the session, and what they do is find, you know, you can go over whatever memory or issue is.
Are you there, Layla? She has dropped off. Called on back in, sis. We're on air with Layla Wills, and she's written a fantastic book. And I'm going to ask your question, Brother Roderick, in the chat room, but she's dropped off. Hopefully she'll call right back. And I've read the book, and I want you guys to give it a chance. I don't want to censor anything, but it was some pretty explosive stuff in the book, and I would say I didn't think much of it was detrimental, but it is what it is. Here's Layla's back with us right now. Are you there, Layla?
You know? Yeah, I'm
yes.
here. Okay. So we were talking about auditing. So then when, if you had a trouble, something happened, like in one of the Scientology videos, like this guy was talking about when he broke up with his girlfriend. So then the auditor is like, okay, tell me about that. So you have the pre-clear, which is what this person is, because he's not yet clear of all of his issues, engrams, life problems, or whatever you want to call it. And so he keeps going over this situation that happened with the girlfriend, and then the auditor is like, well, what else is there? What do you hear? What do you see? What do you smell? And he keeps going over this incident until what they call he releases the charge, until it no longer has an emotional charge associated with it. And once that occurs, if that occurs in that session, then he has had what they call a win. You know, so like that's one engram that has now been removed. So auditing, you know, if you can think about how many problems you may have had in life, could go on for quite a long time.
So it sounds a bit like almost like psychiatry.
And
that's
then
how it's coming
Scientology
across.
Is anti-psychiatry, but there is no way that it is not associated with psychiatry, hypnosis, quite a few things that have to do with the mind. And they're part of their auditing process. All of this stuff is available that people should research. But all of the things of with their auditing is like it's all hypnosis, you know, like our brain waves are in certain, you know, when you're in a very active state, your brain waves are in one area. When you're asleep, it's in another. When you're awake, but like say you're watching some boring movie, you're really in a trance state. And some of the criticism of Scientology is that it is mind control hypnosis, and that they put these people in a trance, and then you become addicted to the auditing process, which, okay, fine, but meanwhile you're paying for each session that you're getting. So a lot of the controversy surrounding the Nation of Islam doing it is surrounded by two things. Number one is the Church of Scientology has never tried to have black people inside of their church. And then Tony Muhammad has now become like he had this seminar on how to disseminate Scientology to black people. And the third thing is that Dianetics, where when you talk to somebody from the nation, they say, we don't do Scientology, we only do Dianetics. But if you look at Scientology at their bridge to total freedom, Dianetics is ground zero. It's book one on the bridge to total freedom, which is the Scientology religion. So then the Nation of, and when I say Nation of Islam people, I'm not just talking about Nation of Islam people now under the minister. I'm talking about Nation of Islam people from Elijah Muhammad, or just nationalists, or just people who have come through the doors of the Nation of Islam that are very, very up in arms and see this as an assault on the black community. And like the minister and the nation is promoting Scientology to black people.
Like, very good. And hold on 1 second, Layla. Okay. You actually answered one question from Roderick Muhammad, but he also has a comment. He said, that's not true. No hypnosis. You are fully awake. No trance. Shockwave Shyrock says, that sounds like a trip to a psychiatrist's office, agreeing with me. But hey, let me say one quick thing. The call-in number is 646-200-0067. My chat room is full. I know you're listening. Call on in with your questions. Go ahead, Layla.
Yeah, I would like to say something about what Roderick said, and that when we think of hypnosis, then you automatically think that somebody has a clock going back and forth, and you follow the clock, listen to my voice. When I count to three, you're going to close your eyes and then bark like a dog. Like, okay, that is one form of hypnosis. Any repetitive behavior, anything that repeats over and over puts the human mind into some kind of trance. Think about it when you're working out, if you're jogging, if whatever you're doing in a repetitive way, you go into a trance.
Very good, very good. So what do you think this is going to take the nation? What do you think the ultimate legacy of the nation will be if it becomes full-blown into Scientology? And I sort of hate to be making the comments that I am making, and that's why I'm asking somebody in the chat room. I know somebody in that chat room knows a little bit more about the situation than myself. Call in and correct myself or correct the author as well. But what do you think is going to take the community?
I personally I don't see anything good coming out of it. And as a matter of fact, the next weekend, you know, the Nation of Islam has, you know, when you listen to their lectures and when you, like, they have this event at the mosque in Chicago next weekend, like, is your relationship in trouble and blah, 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 you need life repair. So, like, if you don't know these buzzwords, then you don't really know that what they're talking about are doctrine from L. Ron Hubbard. And I just want to say this about L. Ron Hubbard is that the reason why so many black people a lot of black people don't know about Scientology, but the ones that do, especially I hear a big, huge outcry on the East Coast. I'm not sure about anywhere else. But the reason why is because L. Ron Hubbard is like a documented, like unapologetic racist. Like he wrote a letter to his wife, like, or said something to his wife. Why are you scrubbing the floors on your hands and you scrubbing the floors? Get yourself a nigger to do it. That's what they're here for. And so that's one thing where he was totally unapologetic. So if you followed Elijah Muhammad, like, he is, according to the research and what's out there on him, is that he is the definition of what Elijah Muhammad calls a devil. Like, just straight up. If you believe in Elijah Muhammad talking about the white man is the devil, then racist, oppressor, the great white race, things like that, they say is associated with L. Ron Hubbard. They said he was a con man, confidence tricks, you know, all kinds of, like, it's not wholesome if you do the research. You know, so I really don't know where this is going, but I know, you know, I'm not sure what the intention of science of the Church of Scientology is by getting Tony Muhammad, the Nation, and all that. But a lot of, you know, black people are not just getting ready to go and do these things. Now they're going to have their antennas up and see what's being promoted to them, because all the time we're always the biggest mark of everybody. And who do they go through first? They go through our clergy people. So, you know, I don't know what to say. I don't see anything good coming out of it.
Very good. And what would you say to people that may believe that you are a disgruntled former member of the Nation of Islam, out to discredit where the minister's taking the nation? What would you say to those people?
That's how they are. Like, they are very paranoid. So if you say anything, you're the enemy, or you were put up to it by the enemy. And honestly, I'm not a disgruntled member of the Nation of Islam. I did not write an expose or a gossipy tell-all book on the Nation of Islam. What my book is just the evolution of this group that started when we were only 65 years off of the plantation. And it was a phenomenon in the country, and that's what the book is. A lot of people who say that haven't even read it, because there's no way they would read that book and think that I was doing some kind of smear campaign against the nation.
Very good. Layla, we're going to the phone lines right now. Area code 312-343. Talk to me. It's Dino Dean.
Hi, Gil. How you doing? I'm calling you from Iowa, going back to Chicago.
Very good, sir.
I've been listening to your show, and well, there's a few comments I'd like to make, of course. Number one, she's going to invest all kind of money into a movie or something like that. She should save her money because he's not dead. Because, you know, you make the money when the guy's dead. Number two, he's just a capitalist himself. See, that's all he did was use the three things that most religions do. Delusions of grandeur, delusions of pure persecution, and the delusions of egotism. You put them in the right categories and the right mix, and you got followers. And look at him. He's got people really, I don't know, it's unbelievable, selling bean pies and newspapers for him. And, you know, he don't pay them. He's just raking in the money himself. He's just a hustler like the rest of these people who have religions and churches.
Oh, very good, caller. I don't know if the financial status of the nation, whether or not people are getting anything, but I can say this personally. Through what I've studied over the years, the minister has been a beacon of light in our community. So you're entitled to your opinion, but did you want to comment on that, Layla?
No, he's entitled to his opinion.
Absolutely. We're going to go to another caller, area code 708-351. Talk to me. It's Dino Dean. 708-351, are you with me?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, that's me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay.
Did you have a question or comment?
I feel the nation did a lot of positive things for the black community, you know what I'm saying, just people in general, you know what I'm saying, not just black people, but they got on other issues, not just, you know what I'm saying, Nation of Islam people, but human people all together, because when Malcolm was living, that's what he should have been with the United Nations for. We just don't want to have a black and white issue. We want to have a people, a human issue. You know what I'm saying? So that is not a black and white thing, but really, like, see, that guy is a Caucasian, tied to his opinion, but at the same time it is, Malcolm has went more of, it's not just a black and white thing. We want to have a human rights thing. So it's issues still going on, and it's really a human rights thing. With Dianetics, they talk about, you know what I'm saying, survival. It's basically built on a lot of people's survival. You know what I'm saying? Not just black people, but black people too, survival. And his message that he gives, and he was stating that how the Caucasian people is not producing like they should produce. That's why they kind of fear black people, because they're not producing like black people and Hispanic people. And Caucasians feel, man, if we keep this up, our race will be destroyed. We're not trying to inflict any pain on the Caucasian people, okay? But we're trying to do is survive like any other race is trying to do.
Very, very, very good caller. I'm have to cut you off. I have another caller. I appreciate you calling in and getting that off your chest, buddy. We're going to another caller. And did you want to comment on that, Layla? Or did you want to keep it moving to another caller?
No, I just want to say that nothing takes away the good that has come from the Nation of Islam. I mean, I just want to be clear on that. Well, the only thing that we're talking about is the union or merger or relationship with the Church of Scientology, but nothing negates the benefit that a lot of us have gotten from the Nation of Islam. You know, I just want to be clear on that.
Very good. Area code 864. Talk to me. It's Dino Dean.
Yes, sir. This is Brother Carlos Cote out of South Carolina. And real quick, for to be concise with this, I was one of the authors' overall pronouncement of the minister. And the way I see this whole thing with Scientology is nothing but a business deal. And about L. Ron Hubbard and whatnot, he went and learned this stuff over in Asia. If you get into people like Krishnamurti and stuff like that, which they all got it from the ancient black Buddhas, but that's neither here nor there. But I just see it as a business deal, no different than joining Christianity or Islam or whatever, whatnot. But I just wanted the author's overall pronouncement of the minister. That's all. Peace.
Very good. Thanks for your comment. Did
Can
you
I say something to that, Dino?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. See, men and women, like, we have this dynamic going on, all right? So when this happened, this relationship was forming with the nation, and I was, like, all up in arms, and I'm like, what is going on? How could you all go along with this? What was happening here? And so the women would be like, well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, like, we're all, like, trying to find answers, and then all the men was like, it's money. It's money. He's doing it for the money. But I just want to say this. is that in, when the minister had that, he got really ill. He's had a lot of health battles. And then when he got really ill and had that long surgery, like 14-hour surgery, which was the beginning of 2007, since after that, there was a memo leaked by the department. I don't know if it was leaked by them, but the memo was from the Department of Homeland Security. And then the memo said, uncertain leadership succession poses risk. It was as if, okay, this man could be on his deathbed. We don't know who is in place to take over this group. And then the next thing you know, like a few months late, so I don't know what else the memo said. There were news articles on it, but no, I didn't have any details on what exactly that memo said. So then a few months later, it was like the minister was talking about, or a short time later, the nation joining with the Church of Scientology. He was going to L.A. to work on his album. And I really thought something was wrong. I was like, they did something to him because this doesn't make sense. So I just wanted to say that, like, there is a possibility something else could be behind this, but, you know, I don't know.
Let me ask you this, Layla. How do you think the Honorable Elijah Muhammad would feel seeing the direction that the nation is going in today?
I am not qualified to answer that question because the minister and the nation, they have taken a position.
Are you there, Layla?
Ron Hubbard and... You know, I don't know, because L. Ron Hubbard was around when the messenger was around, so I don't know. I can't answer that.
But former
followers of Elijah Muhammad have taken serious issue with this.
Very, very good, Layla. And is there a volume two in the works?
Possibly. Now, a lot of people didn't know, most people didn't know that I was even doing the volume one. But since I did it and it's been released and it is really, really circulating, it has released other, like made other people come out with other information and all that. I will do a volume two only if it'll be constructive, but other than that, I'm still not interested in just doing an expose on the nation. I'm more concerned about the issues and what the implications of all of this is for all of us, not just the nation.
Very good. We're going to go to another caller. Area code 917. Talk to me, it's Dino Dean.
Yes, hello, Mr. Dean, Satan calling from New York City. I wanted to ask the Sister Layla, do you believe, sis, that if black folks knew the relationship between L. Ron Hubbard and people like Aleister Crowley, who was a
demonologist,
but he was also a practitioner of black magic, and also Satanism, and also Aleister Crowley's son, who had declared Aleister Crowley, who proclaimed himself to be Satan himself in some instances. And if the structure of a lot of what L. Ron Hubbard had done, and even stuff that L. Ron Hubbard had done with Jack Parsons,
right?
You know, they're development of this star child and the relationship that they had with that woman that they were, you know, some of the things that they were doing. And what do you think that people within the nation, if they had the opportunity to explore who this person was, because, you know, I mean, oftentimes when a person creates something and you don't know who they are, then oftentimes what they've created is a manifestation of what they believe. Because I heard you mention before, that you're talking about Scientology and L. Ron Hubbard and his racist opinions of a black. So what do you think that their reaction would be if they knew the whole story about L. Ron Hubbard and, you know, his positions? How do you think that they'd respond to it?
Great question.
Okay. Well, I honestly, at this stage of the game, this has been going on for at least 3 years, and it did not go over very smoothly inside of the Nation of Islam. But the people who objected to it basically are, put into the category of being a hypocrite or disbeliever and things like that. So at this stage, the people in the nation right now who didn't leave after this whole situation, I don't think they would ever even find out about it. I don't think, because even Scientology has where they don't want you to read or listen to any opposition. And the Nation has something similar, like you can't question, even though you're supposed to be able to question it, but if you question anything and ask the wrong question, now you're going to be, you know, bullied or looked at as the enemy and things like that. So I really don't think the people in the Nation are going to find out all of the implications around L. Ron Hubbard, his record, his associations and everything else.
Layla, we're coming up against the break. Area code 202-708. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going straight back to the phone line. You're listening to the Dino Dean Show, Holla Back Radio.
Breastfeeding doesn't suck. You'll feel way less crazy.
It makes you skinny. It burns 500 calories a day.
It helps you bond.
No periods.
It's free.
And it's so good for the baby's brain.
Less flu.
Less allergies.
It lessens the threat of childhood obesity.
It seriously reduces your chance of getting breast cancer.
It reduces the risk of childhood cancer.
It could save the U.S. billions of dollars a year in healthcare costs.
Whip them out.
Whip them out.
Whip them out.
Breastfeeding. It's what your tits are for.
There are heroes among us. They don't fly or bend steel or ride off into the sunset. They simply volunteer to look after someone else's health by providing comfort, lending a hand, or simply keeping us on track. Everyone's health needs a hero. Who will you look out for?
Find out how you can participate in improving our health. Visit iParticipate.org.
The movie. And we're going to go straight back to the phone lines. I know you've been waiting for a while. Area code 202. Talk to me. It's Dino Dean.
Well, hello. This is Renee Dawson. And
hey, how you doing, Renee?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. I read the book recently, and I'll tell you, it's explosive. I think it's revelatory, and I think it's very relevant today. I think that people need to start thinking for themselves and looking into themselves and understanding what these institutions have done to us over the years. And I'm not trying to vilify, you know, the good minister's name. However, the jig is up. It is time to get back into a different kind of spirituality and understand that we don't need institutions to guide us into a higher realm. And I know I'm going off the topic, but the point is that, like a lot of religions these days, they're all questionable. And it started off good, and I know that there were some good intentions for this and a need for the Nation. However, it just, I don't think it evolved as the great Elijah Muhammad maybe would have wanted it to see it evolve. And
okay.
it's not as strong as it used to be. And it's time for us to look inside ourselves now.
Very good, and thanks for your comments, Renee, and don't
Can
be a stranger
say
to the show.
On that?
Absolutely, yeah. Layla.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, earlier today, I was talking to someone, and, you know, he was really taking an issue with, like, if this is true that the Nation is leading people into Scientology, you know, like, all of this stuff. But the thing is, like, what she's saying, what I'm getting is that we all have an internal alarm system. You know, like when you're watching something on television or somebody says something to you or you're hearing something, you have a reaction. an immediate reaction to it. And what that reaction is your own self-preservation kicking in. But then you have the conscious choice to override your first mind. And then when you override your first mind, you've turned off self-preservation. So we kind of get whatever it is we're asking for. But all of us have an alarm system. And that's why, for me, this is so outrageous, because the Nation of Islam did this whole, like, it's a research team. You know, they did the secret relationship between blacks and Jews, and it's all these footnotes. And how come nobody did that for the Church of Scientology and L. Ron Hubbard? Like, where was that thorough investigation before now it's being, you know, promoted to the masses? So, yeah.
Hey, you asked some great questions, Layla, and, you know, I agree with you. And I don't know if any investigation was done, but I can't state this. I have heard myself and have read and researched that L. Ron Hubbard was a racist. And mm-hmm. that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of surprised, and not me trying to question the wisdom of the minister. Far be it for me to say I'm on his level, but, you know, like the old saying goes, the fruit doesn't really fall too far from the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But Layla, did you want to leave us with a closing statement and let us know where we can buy the book?
Okay, well, thanks for having me, first of all, and taking charge of this conversation, because this has been going on for years and no one in the black press has reported or even raised the issue. So that's why black people didn't even know that this was going on. And some people have gone as far as to say that there is an invasion of the black community by the Church of Scientology. So I think we all need to do some research. The second thing is, so thank you for that. And the book is available as an ebook or paperback on Amazon.com, Farcon the Movie.
Can you stick around for just one more second? I have another caller.
Sure.
Okay, here we go. 614. Talk to me. It's Dino Dean. Did you have a question or a comment for Layla Wills?
Well, I have a comment. First of all, peace, Brother Dino Dean. This is Imam Bilal. As usual,
hey,
you have a great show, and your guest is quite informative. And I plan to pick up that book, sister. Thank you very much for the information. You know, having been around a long time while the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was alive, and having been a part of the Nation of Islam long, long ago, I can say this, that Mr. Hubbard was around then, and he would have been called a devil then by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and there was no movement towards dealing with him or his doctrine.
He didn't even mention it. He passed in 1975, so it was never mentioned.
Absolutely. And for the minister to do this this association with them, I think is blasphemous. If the Quran is not enough, then what do you have? That's kind of crazy. But I appreciate the show, brother and sister. I thank you very much for the book. I'm going to go and get this book and read it. I'm not going to get the E. I'm going to get the book so I can pass it along. So thank you very much. And brother Dean, I appreciate you. Thank you.
Imam Bilal, one quick thing, please.
Yes, sir.
Don't pass that book along. Encourage them to buy it. You gotta.
Now, I love you, man. You know that. And I'm not passing the book alone. They got to get their own.
Absolutely.
Thanks
a lot, ma'am.
And my wife says hi.
Very good. Tell Lady Fatima I said hello. Well, Layla, I'm going to let you go. I don't want to tie up the rest of your Sunday. And I really appreciate you coming on air with us today. And you did a fantastic job. You answered some tough questions. I didn't want to make this a fluff interview. You know,
mm-hmm.
you held your own and you did well, and I appreciate you coming on air.
Okay, thanks so much, you know, and just encourage your people to do their research.
Absolutely. Have a fantastic rest of your Sunday.
Thank you, Ethan.
That is author Layla Wills, author of the book, Farrakhan the Movie. And like I stated earlier in the show, I read the book. I found the book to be very intriguing. Go get it. Judge for yourself. I don't know the intricacies of the hierarchy of the nation. You know, there's some things that I question from being on the outside looking in, but I will trust the wisdom of Minister Farrakhan. But at the same token, there are many people that have questions on what's going on with this Scientology piece. But with that said, we're going to take a brief break, and we will be right back.
As parents, we all want what is best for our kids. Did you know that you should keep your child in a rear-facing car seat until they're at least 1 year old and walking on their own?
Infants have large, heavy heads compared to the rest of their body. They need time to develop strong back and neck muscles.
So it doesn't matter if your child's feet touch the back of the seat or they still can't see out the window. It's still better to keep them rear-facing as long as possible.
Do everything you can!
Remember, child car seats are the law.
What if you could designate someone to go to work for you? What if you could have a designated person show up to hear your economics professor drone on like a plane engine for 2 hours straight? Or if you could designate somebody to go to that family party where your relatives will surely pinch your cheek and tell you how much you've grown since they saw you last? Well, you can't. Whether you like it or not, you're going to have to show up to work, listen to your professor, and put up with your great Aunt Betsy talking your ear off about her dog. But you can designate a sober driver to get you home safe at the end of the night. I could have. I wish I did.
Drunk drivers kill someone approximately every 48 minutes in the United States. These deaths can be prevented easily by designating a sober driver at the beginning of a night out drinking. Make the right choice. Designate a sober driver. Visit drivesober.wordpress.com for more information.
Once again, that call-in number is 646-200-0067. We're going into our Get It Off Your Chest Sunday segment where we talk about any and everything. And there's something I want to get off my chest today. We're going to talk a little bit about the current events that's going on. Uncle Jerry Sandusky from Penn State to the State Pen. Very good. He has been convicted, I believe, on 45 or 48 counts of child molestation, and I applaud the jury in Pennsylvania for doing their due diligence and doing the right thing. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I want to talk to us about these predators that's in our communities today. We have a lot of predatory behavior towards children. And one thing in our community, we try to act like it really doesn't exist, as though this is something that happens in white America. But a lot of it has seeped into our communities over the years. And I want to tell everybody, take care of your children, take care of your little boys and your little girls, because first and foremost, you don't want something to happen to your child that will cause something terrible to stigmatize them. And lastly, you don't want to go to jail, because I know many of us, we found out somebody has done something in a sexual manner to our children that, hey, you know, it's going to be trying to lock me up. But I also want to tell you about this group called NAMBLA that I ran across, real sick group of people. And I'm on their Who We Are page, and it says, welcome, the North American Man-Boy Love Association, NAMBLA, N-A-M-B-L-A. Was formed in 1978. It was inspired by the success of a campaign based in Boston's gay community to defend against a local witch hunt. NAMBLA's goals is to end the extreme oppression of men and boys in mutually consensual relationships. This stuff is thick, family. You have an organization that's been around since 1978 that has been working to have relationships between boys and men. So this stuff is everywhere, and I implore everybody, go to your whatever state you're in, go to the sex offender list. You'll be shocked till you see. these people in your neighborhood that you wave at every day. But I'm going to get back on this NAMBLA piece. NAMBLA calls for the empowerment of youth in all areas, not just the sexual. We support greater economic, political, and social opportunities for young people and denounce the rampant ageism. This is what they call it, ageism, that segregates and isolates them in fear and mistrust. We believe sexual feelings are a positive life force. We support the rights of youth as well as adults to choose partners with whom they wish to share and enjoy their bodies. That's absolutely sick. And it's to the point now, not trying to bash gays, but what is next? We have the marriage of gays that's coming across in these states. You know, if that's what you do, that's what you do. But that thing has been subtly portrayed and interwoven into our mindset to whereas black people that used to be the moral compass of our nation have, for the most part, accepted it, saying people do whatever they want to do. Now, what's next? What's next down the pipeline another 50, 60 years? Will they be talking about ageism? You have to look at this stuff. These people have been around since 78. That's almost 40 years. Lobbying for men and boys to have sexual relationships, and they don't think anything is wrong with it. This is something that I wanted to bring to your attention because you never know what the next trend may be in our nation called America, because we have a lot of real creepy sex bot type of people, and here's their national anthem. This has to be the name. Let me pull it up. I wanted to pull this down for you. Remember that old song by Aaliyah? Age ain't nothing but a number, throwing down ain't nothing but a thing. It's on the reverse. It's on the reverse side. They want to get these boys, and they want to try to indoctrinate people and smooth it over. And we'll slowly see it within the next 20 to 25 years, as sick as talk TV is with these talk shows. They'll start incorporating it, talking about they feel they're being infringed upon. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Be on the lookout for groups like that. Also, the disrespect does not stop for our president, President Barack Obama. There's a lady named Barbara Espinosa from Hair on Fire Radio, KFXN in Arizona. She's out calling the president names, calling him a monkey. Barbara, you can't get any more creative than that. And let me play the clip so you guys can hear exactly what she said and how mean-spirited it was.
Q.com. And we've got Richard on the phone. Richard, jump in here with Joe and Tom and Randy and Charles and myself.
Yeah, hi, Barb, everybody. I wish people would have the guts on the who runs the shows and all that to ask everybody who goes on these shows. I'd like to know how many people really voted for that idiot sitting in the White House. And anybody who says that they don't know anybody who's trying to destroy this country, all you have to do is see that rabbit ears guy who's sitting in the White House and what he's done to this nation in 3 years.
I call him a monkey.
I sit here wondering why I spent 30 years in the Marine Corps defending this country against communism and 2 tours in Vietnam and God knows where else I've been in this godforsaken world.
Well, Joe, I don't call him guy with rabbit ears. I call him a monkey. And I call him, I don't believe in calling him the first black president. I think he should be called.
I would have voted. I had Keynes.
I voted for the white guy myself.
Well, the color has no.
She voted for the white guy herself. And that's her prerogative. She can vote for the white guy. She voted for McCain last time. But I wanted to play that clip. And not so much for the disrespect of the President of the United States, which we all know he gets much disrespect. But if she's calling him a monkey, she's actually calling us monkeys. She can't just think that just about President Barack Obama. This is her speaking to us as a community. This is how she feels about us. And she's on air talking about what she wanted to talk about. But I'm going to go in this direction with the conversation right now. We always talk about the white man this, the white man that. I'm going to ask all of you a question. who is mother's, who is child's first teacher, and that's mother. The mother is the first one to teach the child. Now, with that said, where is the white woman in the equation of white supremacy? We seem to give her a pass and let her stand benevolently by as though she plays no part in white supremacy. If the white mother were teaching her children better, I believe that white supremacy wouldn't be as rampant as it is. We seem to give the white woman a pass. And I'm not saying all white women, but for white supremacy to be as thick and prevalent today in 2012 as it is today, I want to give a shout out to my white mothers. Do better jobs of raising your children and having them be more compassionate towards other ethnicities and other situations, and perhaps this nation will be a better place. We always, forever and a day, have given the white woman a pass. We've given her a pass, at least in these times. We know back in the day she'd cry rape quick, get a brother strung up, quick with the quickness. But now she's benevolent. She is pictures of Mother Earth are her. And she stands there and literally gets a pass from our community. She is getting subsidies because she's a quote-unquote minority, which I will never understand. She's a part of the quote-unquote majority here in this country. But since she's a white woman, she's a minority, stifling that money back into her community, getting it right back in. See, this is how the game goes. And I'll call out to any of my white female listeners, call the show. Call in number 646-200-0067. Talk to me. How do you raise your children? Do you raise them to be inclusive? Do you raise them to be colorblind? Because if you say you raise them to be colorblind, that would be a lie. And that's actually stupid. No one should raise their child, black, white, purple, whatever, to be colorblind. Because it's not about that. It's about appreciating all groups of people, regardless of who they are. I would love for one of my white female callers to call in and tell us how you raise your babies. But from my vantage point, it seems though you are not doing that good of a job, because your young men and your young women are growing up as racist as ever. This thing is not declining. We'll have certain studies and certain polls saying that the youth are past race in white America. I've never gotten a call. I've never gotten a call from any poll place. I think a lot of that stuff is a hoax. That's me personally. Let me go to my chat room. I have a 19-year-old boy, white, goes out with the 18-year-old girl, lady. Both of them are getting racial attack by black young people more. And that is from Lots X No More. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. Hey, it goes both ways. It goes both ways. I bear witness, but I have a show geared towards our people. Therefore, I'm going to kind of talk from that perspective. And interracial marriage and interracial dating, you know, hey, I don't believe anybody should be bothered going about their way on the street. If you're in love or whatever, you know, you choose who you choose to want to be in love with. And I think it's deplorable for young blacks to be bothering interracial couples. But I would venture to say that is a lot smaller in number than the other way around. We've gone to, hold on, let me go to the phone lines. Area code 614, did you want to chime back in?
Brother Dino Dean, thank you very much again. I'm listening to you, and I had done some research a little while ago about pedophilia, and I had put in, I think it's Ohio, and they have this list that, you know, you can go and you can see these people. And I was appalled at the number of African-American males that were on these. And then I pulled them up in several other states, and I was appalled again at the significant number of African-American males. But I want to call and get something off my chest, and it's this. You know, you mentioned the Caucasian woman, and, you know, she was talking on the radio about the president being a monkey, and right, you're absolutely right. In inference, she's saying that all blacks, people with black in them, are monkeys. Well, in the Washington Post here on June the 10th, the Sunday paper, there's an article. And I just want to read a little bit of this article and make a little statement here.
Very good.
The DNA study sheds light on an Appalachian genealogical mystery. And
the blue people.
Excuse me?
Are you going to be talking about the blue people?
No.
Okay,
no,
go ahead, brother. I'm
people.
Sorry.
This article, it says, and I just want to read just two paragraphs. It says, for years, varied and sometimes wild claims have been made about the origins of a group of dark-skinned Appalachian residents once known derisively as the Malungians. There was speculation that they were descended from Portuguese explorers or perhaps from Turkish slaves or gypsies. A DNA study in the Journal of Genetic Genealogy found the truth to be somewhat less exotic. The genetic evidence shows that the people historically called Malungians are the offspring of sub-Saharan African men and white women of northern or central European origin. Now, let me tell you why this is important. It says in recent years it has been become a catch term for people of mixed race ancestry and has been applied to about 200 communities from New York to Louisiana. It says the Montauks, the Manitoulks, and others in New York, Pennsylvania, the Pools, North Carolina, the Lumbees, the Waccamaws, and the Hollimaws in South Carolina, the Red Bones, the Buckheads, the Yellowhammers, the Creoles, the others, and the Creoles. All of these people have within them the genetics of the sub-Saharan, the black Africans, which they, if you look at the map, they're talking about Guinea, Upper Guinea, and Lower Guinea. So this Caucasian woman is talking this stuff, and also it says here in this article that President Lincoln was of the descendancy of these people. President Abraham Lincoln was a descendant of these people. So you have these Caucasians talking this pure race crap about not having, about black blood this, black blood that. And I guarantee you, if you did her DNA study, she probably got some African blood in her that shows up predominantly. It's just like the man that did this article. He's a professor. He said that he told people he didn't have no black blood in him. I don't have any African blood. I'm white. My people are from Europe. And his pronounced genetic characteristic in his DNA study says that he was African, of African origin. And he did it three times because he was angry that it came up that he was African. You know, so these people are just plain stupid.
Iman Bilal. Iman, yeah. Let me interrupt you just one second. You are our Florida Evans, damn caller of the show, brother. I bear witness to what you're saying, but continue your point, please.
What I'm saying, man, is this. You know, that they're going to look at a man's ears and say because his ears. Well, if you look, they did a show on the History Channel on the ears of the Pharaoh. And it seems the Pharaoh had the same kind of damn ears, excuse my expression, that the president had. Okay? And you look at his features and stuff, he looks like he's from a line of pharaohs. Okay? So him being president in the United States was a reflection of his genetics. His daddy from Kenya. They came out of Egypt. You see what I'm saying? So this woman, she's insane. She's absolutely insane, and Caucasian women, I did some shows on our program dealing with the Caucasian women from a biblical perspective, and it's rather punishing the biblical perspective of Caucasian women and how they raise their children and how they behave sexually. And all of these things. So, you know, don't be sitting around casting stones at people when you might very well be black yourself.
Let me interrupt you for just a brief second. And a lot of the stuff that they say against the president, I personally don't have a problem with. I didn't really have a problem with her talking about his ears, because historically nobody called us rabbit ears in a derogatory manner. Maybe she was just talking. Well, actually, that was the one gentleman that was speaking. He was speaking about a characteristic of his ears, you know, trying to make a little ha-ha funny point. Well, you know, that's cool. But when you know that historically in this country and around the world as for that fact, you know, they've tried to call us gorillas and apes and monkeys, that just showed you right there where she was going with this. I have no problem with anybody that wants to talk about the president and his policies. You know, everybody is in politics. Well, I call it politics. And
yeah.
you're entitled to your opinion on that. But when you get into the physical characteristics of him, and what sealed the deal was when she said, I voted for the white guy.
Absolutely.
You know, that just kind of summed it all up for me. And I think she's deplorable. And that's why I talked about, where does the white woman stand in white supremacy? Go ahead, brother.
Well, you know, I worked for the Civil Rights Commission before retiring. And I can say, from having dealt with those cases for a number of years, and then being director of HR and director of Civil Rights and EEO, the Caucasian woman has benefited the most out of the civil rights movement thing.
Absolutely.
And they have floated up to this glass ceiling, and they're up there, they're doing the very things that their husbands did. They're behaving exactly like the Caucasian male behaved towards them, and not letting them vote and keeping them out of different jobs and things. These people are doing the very same things. And if you look at the number of cases that are being filed, even currently, dealing with civil rights, there are against heads of department supervisors who are white women, So, you know, but, you know, to speak about the president and his characteristics and, you know, the ear and his ears and any feature, to me, shows a very stupid way of thinking about things. And to infer that blacks are apes is really stupid, because we continuously say that we came from Adam and Eve. I mean, that's something that's just in the black community. There's no African American that's going to say my ancestor was a damn ape. We're not going to do that. We're not even going to debate the thing of evolution with you, because we are parents of a man and a woman. And this is what we historically have been given. And this is all we know. And when the Caucasian man says that he came from an ape, that's his choice. You know, the Chinese just did a study that they submitted, and they said that they have...
Amen, be loud. We're coming up again.
I'm going to finish up right here, that it came from a black man and a black woman. This is the Chinese people. So, you know, they can go where they want to go.
Absolutely.
Thank you, man.
Thanks so much for chiming back in, brother.
Okay, thank you.
We're coming up against a break right now, and we're going to take a brief break, and we will be right back.
If you drink any amount of alcohol when you're pregnant, you could complicate your child's life forever.
Your baby could be born with fetal alcohol syndrome, the leading known cause of mental retardation.
It can also mean organ dysfunction, facial deformities, and learning disabilities.
But fetal alcohol syndrome is 100% preventable. So if you're pregnant or thinking about becoming pregnant, don't drink. It's that simple.
A few drinks can last a lifetime.
Don't risk it.
For information, contact the National Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome.
Up to 300 people are killed every year in accidents where the driver has fallen asleep at the wheel. Before you feel too tired, pull off the road into a services or other safe area. Drink some strong coffee and take a quick nap while the caffeine kicks in.
If you're having a nap, you've left your lights on, sir.
Aye, cheers.
Think. Don't drive tired.
Welcome back to the Dino Dean Show. The call-in number is 646-200-0067. Once again, that call-in number is 646-200-0067. And we're in our Get It Off Your Chest Sunday segment. And there's something else I want to get off my chest. And I found this very revealing. Asians have surpassed Hispanics as the largest group of new immigrants to the United States, according to a new study from the Pew Research Center. The study, called The Rise of Asian Americans and released on Tuesday, The study, called The Rise of Asian Americans and released on Tuesday, reveals that Asian Americans also have the highest income, are the best educated, and are the fastest growing racial group in America. About 430,000 Asians, or 36% of all new immigrants, arrived in the United States in 2010, according to U.S. Census data. About 370,000, or 31%, were Hispanic. I found that very revealing. I'm going to play a clip that I think everybody needs to hear. Very important piece by Dr. Claude Anderson. He wrote the book called Powernomics, and this is from one of his lectures, and it is called Inappropriate Behavior. Let me pull it up. Here it is right here, and you'll see why I found this clip to be very revealing.
A few minutes. Two, we're going to have a massive, unending influx of immigrants into the country. They're going to push us down. We have been the number two population in America now for over 460 years. We're going to get kicked out of being number two and going down to number three. When are we going to go down to number three? We're going to go down to number three in less than 2 years. Now, when I wrote my book about 4 or 5 years ago, Hispanics at that time were 9% of the population. They've now moved in 6 years from 9% up to 11%. Blacks were 12.3% 6 years ago. They're still at 12.3%. Now you got a Hispanics at 11 and blacks at 12.3. According to the Census Bureau 2 weeks ago in Washington, D.C., they anticipate Hispanics passing blacks right on time, as I had predicted. Now, Wall Street Journal, the left-hand column 2 weeks ago, on the left-hand side of the page, I can send it to you if you want, it says that when Hispanics passed black people, at that time, the whole political structure would shift gears. There'd be a power shift in America. That nobody's going to go to black folks to ask them anything anymore because you're no longer a dominant minority population. They are already preparing for this. They're already creating all kinds of major programs around the country where they would go and check with Hispanics about anything they want to know about minorities. Black folk would get their information through the Hispanic Society. Then by the year 2005, the Asians are going to pass black folk. Then you're going to get kicked from being number three down to number four. At that point in time, you're locked in and frozen because everything you need will have to pass through those two groups. And those two groups do not have your interest at heart. They don't understand your problems and don't care about it. If you can't compete, they're going to say that's tough.
That's Dr. Claude Anderson in a lecture that he did out in California called Inappropriate Behavior. And I wanted to play that clip because what we just read about the Asian immigrants, you know, he's a few years off. His years aren't exactly correlating, but his message rings true. Pretty soon, we will be the number four, quote-unquote, minority here in America. And like the brother said, we will have absolutely no clout then. And our leadership, I believe, knows this. This is why our leadership, quote-unquote leadership in our communities, are aligning themselves with Hispanics. They're aligning themselves with Asians. They're aligning themselves with other groups and not really hitting on things in our community that we need, like economic development. You know, I'm tired of watching our leadership going around talking about the gay community and their rights. You know, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel, but I wish you had that much fervor for us. I wish you had that much passion for us, because I actually believe that we're going to eventually, if we don't change this thing around quickly, and this is what Dr. Claude Anderson says with his research, that we're going to be on the verge, we are on the verge of being a permanent underclass here in the United States of America, a permanent underclass. And that is a very spooky thought, to see how we can be locked in. And we all know that the felonization of our young men through the drug trade is going on rampantly. The prison industrial complex is there and with their arms wide open to take our young men and our young women and felonize them and lock them out. It's the new Jim Crow. And fantastic book by Professor Michelle Alexander, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness. I would implore any and everybody to read that book, because it's an eye-opener. It's a very sobering book as well, to see how the thing has been laid out for us to fail, and our leadership is not really getting to the true issues, because there is and there has been a political shift in this nation. Like I said on a past show, you can go into a fast food restaurant and our babies are not working in there, full of Hispanics. Not knocking the Hispanics, but our children would like to have some money for the summer. Our children would like to have a little job to help out around the house. We're being pushed to the side, and to watch our leadership talk about, like last week, President Obama in this basically passing his form of the DREAM Act with this executive order that he signed. You know, it may be humane, but it's not good for us. It's definitely not good for us, because with the influx of illegal aliens in this country, and those of you who want to say they were already here and this is their land, the white man's the alien, shut up, because we have to deal with the reality of today. Our children need to eat. We need to eat as well. And like Dr. Claude Anderson stated, they do not have our best interest at heart. And I can't blame them. They're for themselves, like any other group would be. But we're so kind and forgiving and loving that we want to speak for everybody else but ourselves. And I'm really tired of this foolishness that's going on with us speaking up for everybody but ourselves. Just food for thought. I want you guys to think about what I just stated. Permanent underclass. If that does not have you shuddering in your boots, nothing else will. Because this thing isn't about myself. It isn't about Lady Fatima, Imam Bilal, or the author we had on the show, Layla Wills. This is about our children. This is about our grandchildren. And this is about our young ladies having a pool of young men whom to choose from when it's time to marry. It's about the elevating of our people. I'm sick of us putting our nose in everybody else's business. You know, hell, if my house is on fire and my neighbor's house is on fire, I'm not going to go run in his house with a water hose. I'm going to put the water on my home first. That's just the way it goes, and that's the way that it should be. This is for our children and our grandchildren, because permanent underclass means poverty. It's for those who didn't get what I'm talking about. There's enough poverty in our communities as it is, and poverty breeds insanity, as you can see in the inner cities all across this nation. When you don't have money, people go berserk. You have random shootings, and some people may say, hey, it's not due to the lack of money. When you go into more affluent areas, and you don't see all that violence either. There has to be some type of correlation. So I would like to see, like I talk about a whole lot on this show, let's start supporting these black entrepreneurs, because we are all that we have. We're all that we have. We're on the verge of being a permanent underclass in this nation, and that is not a good thing, and I don't feel good about even saying something like that. But somebody got to tell us. I'm not hearing this from any other quote-unquote leader. I'm not hearing it from anyone else. I heard it from Dr. Claude Anderson, and the brother dropped it like it's hot in that particular piece. He told the truth. We have to realize that we're in a real precarious situation at this particular juncture of our history here in America. Because, like I just stated, when you have poverty, you have ignorant behavior, you have all types of violence, and it's been on and popping here in the Chicagoland area, and it's sickening. And not only, it's even more sad than it is sickening to watch people being slayed in the streets. But we have our leaders talking about some doggone, we need immigration reform. Stop that foolishness. We need to do something about our people first. And for you public officials, you cowardly ones that are too afraid to speak up for us, we need to just vote you out. We need to vote you out. That's why we need to vote. All of you black politicians that stand there and idly watch our communities just erode, and I'm going to call one out, mine, Jesse Jackson Jr. Brother has done nothing. All he talks about is an airport. He's been talking about an airport for 11 years, an airport that may not ever come to fruition. I wonder, do the brother have a plan B? Because the area where he resides over, man, y'all know, it's rough. You might as well be on the south side of Chicago on the west side. It's rough. These are suburbs. And he's going around talking about what should be done for other peoples. He's going around lining himself up with everybody else but us. I'm tired of this foolishness. And to the Congressman Jackson, brother, you need to really shape it up. Because I know it's prestigious to have your little spot. But, hey, you're going to have to do something better. And our people need to be more informed. How long is this man going to run on an airport that hasn't even come yet? I can see if he got it. Ask him. I want everybody to email Congressman Jackson and ask him what he's actually done other than a few nurse jobs over 11 years. It's sad. It's real sad. And I was listening to talk radio one day. There was a Hispanic congressperson on in Indiana, and she says, I represent Hispanic people. That's what she said, and I'm sure there aren't only Hispanic people in her district. That's what she said on air publicly. You think one of these black public officials will come forth and say, I represent black people? Hell no. Scared to death. Scared to death. We must be inclusive. Yeah, you need to be inclusive, but man, find a way to work the system to help your people. And stop being ashamed of being down for your people until it's time for that vote. I need your vote, brother. We need a brother or sister in that spot. Why, if there's no change? Somebody answer me, why do we need that person in that spot if there's no change? I'm getting a little bit fired up today, but I'm going to end the show today. One more quick thing, and I'm going to implore our black politicians, get some damn balls, male or female. If you're female, get you some damn ovaries and do something for your people. But I want to thank everybody in the chat room today, Anthony L., Donald Yarsborough, Lady Fatima, and Lost Xno Xmo, Ms. Extraordinaire, Paris Walker Sr., Rose to Stardom Radio. I appreciate all of you so much, and I appreciate all of the callers that called into the show today. All of you, like I've said many times, I have the best callers in all of talk radio. And with that said, I'm going to end this show today. I smell some food upstairs, and I'm getting hungry. But as I always do, I end playing a song. And this is a fantastic sister here, Patrice Rushen, excellent musician. And we're going to let her take us out today with Forget Me Nots. I will talk to you guys next week.